Jamie, we were praying for you while you were gone. Dave? We're praying for you guys while you're gone. Hope everything goes well. All right. Don't you love being part of a smaller church? So I'm going to do something a little different today. Joshua rewind God's faithfulness. And so at this point, we're not done with Joshua at all. I'm just saying that. We've been through 9 chapters really kind of a little bit more in a detailed way. So I want to rewind Joshua for us today. And what I'm going to do, I hope you have your Bible. If you don't, turn, you can grab one of these pew Bibles. Because what I'm going to do is rewind Joshua and go back through each chapter with a preview, and then I'm going to do a couple of things. Page 320 in that pew Bible, if you want to follow along. It won't take long. I'm just going to hit each chapter and just make a couple statements about each one and move on. But what this is a big overview, an umbrella view. Not only that, I'm going to go through more than 9 chapters. I'm going to keep on going for a while. And I want you to see the umbrella of God's faithfulness in this book. And I think that would have to be the overarching theme of, it would be God's faithfulness. And Joshua's success, as we entitled this in the first few weeks, is God's faithfulness. Joshua's success was built on God's faithfulness. That is it. So I think Mark has a map as well. We'll put up our faithful map, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So in Joshua chapter 1, God is faithful, and that's kind of how we're going to look at each chapter, God's faithfulness. Joshua chapter 1, God is faithful to transition a monumental leadership. God is faithful to transition a monumental leadership. If you don't think this is significant or huge, try being in leadership. Moses, the man of God, the icon, the giant man of faith who did all those things in Egypt, brought them through. Everybody knew Moses was the man of God, and God successfully, faithfully transitioned them from that to Joshua. Chapter 1, verse 1, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise and go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your feet will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised Moses. Down at verse 5, just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. This is a huge, huge thing that is just happening here. Their leader, their man, the great Moses, has died. They could have just wandered aimlessly. They could have fought over leadership. So many things happened. God faithfully raised up and transitioned Israel into the leadership of Joshua. Chapter 2. God faithfully delivers an immoral person and her family from judgment on wicked Jericho. An entire huge town of wicked people about to be judged, and God is able to deliver one family out of that judgment. That should be hope for all of us. Chapter 3. God faithfully directs Israel across the Jordan into the land and secures Joshua's leadership. Chapter 3, verse 7, the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, when you come to the brink of the waters, you shall stand still in the Jordan. And Joshua said just that to the people. So God faithfully directs Israel across a river, parts the river, and at that point secures or cements Joshua's leadership. Chapter 4. God faithfully oversees the safe crossing and provides a testimony for the next generation. 1 million people had to cross this river, and God stayed right there in the ark in the river until every person was across the river. And then he told them to take the stones and build them up, take them to your camp, and build a monument there for the next generation, for the youth, for the children you're going to bear. They need a monument. So God faithfully oversaw the crossing and provided a testimony for the next generation. Chapter 5. God is faithful to the covenant of circumcision, to the Passover, and he untethers Israel from its past. That should be a huge encouragement to us. God is faithful to his covenants to us. If you have surrendered your life, given your life to the new covenant, the new covenant of his blood, it's a covenant, it's a promise you and God have made. He is faithful to the covenant. The Passover, the blood on the doorpost, the blood on the cross of Christ, and God is still faithful today to untether you and I from our past through the blood of Jesus Christ. Chapter 5, God does that for Israel. Chapter 6, God is faithful to defeat Jericho. Chapter 6, verse 2, again, and the Lord said, this is just reoccurring, this just keeps, and the Lord said, and the Lord said, and the Lord said, and the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and mighty men of valor. No question, God gave Jericho to Joshua. Chapter 7, God is faithful to show Israel why they were turned back. God is faithful to point Israel's sin out to them. And God's words in verse 10, chapter 7, verse 10, the Lord said to Joshua, get up. Why have you fallen on your face? Israel has sinned. They have transgressed my covenant that I commanded them. God is faithful to them and us. He is still faithful today to point out our sin, our transgressions, and tell us to get up and get this right and get going. Chapter 8, God faithfully defeats Ai and renews the ancient covenant at Shechem. Now, here's a weird thing. If you've been like me and you've been pronouncing it Ai all these years, and you ever listen to a Hebrew dude or somebody that knows Hebrew, it's going to throw you because it's I-E. And that just doesn't flow with me, so I'm going to keep calling it Ai, but it's I-E. And it means trouble. And I-E was trouble. They were small but powerful. They were ferocious, but God oversaw this and defeated I-E, and they renewed the covenant, the ancient covenant of Abraham at Shechem, the promise to give them this land. So that is chapter 8. Chapter 9, and that's what we talked about last week. And you'd go, okay, Terry, what are you going to do here? Well, chapter 9 is that God's faithfulness is forgotten or overlooked, and Israel is fooled and fought against. And that's what we talked about last week, the Gibeonites that fooled them and the kings that joined together to fight them. And when you forget God's faithfulness, you are susceptible to be fooled and to be fought against. So God's faithfulness is overlooked or forgotten in chapter 9, and Israel is fooled and fought against. Chapter 10, God is faithful to his foolish nation, the nation that was fooled, but they honored his name and owned up to their foolishness in it. So God is faithful to his fooled nation that honors his name, and the southern kings are defeated. Now, on our map, if you see the bottom red arrows coming across this way, so that's where our people were moving. You can see at the end of that red arrow tip is Ai or IE. and Gibeah, and you go a little farther, there's Bethel and Gibeon and Kirjath Jearim, and there's some other ones down there. Those are these kings, these southern kings, that all kind of banded together to fight them. And it actually really worked out in Israel's favor. Whereas they banded them, and Gibeon, right there, they're the ones that fooled them. It was some of them, but by all these southern kings from that red line and down, by them banding together, it's like you can kill more than two birds with one stone. And so what they did was they banded together, and Joshua came across that red line this way. By all them banding together, he could take that whole region in one swoop there and cut off the north from the south. So it just perfectly worked in his favor, and it cut off the south from the north. So he took that middle red stripe and went southward and defeated the whole southern region in that chapter. Chapter 11, God faithfully then defeats the northern kings. They band together as well, and he faithfully defeats the northern kings. Chapter 12, kind of a scoreboard, if you will. Chapter 12, through God's faithful leading, Moses had defeated two great kings on the right side of the Jordan River there, on the right side. Zion and Og owned that whole side up there. Moses defeated them. Israel defeated them under Moses' leadership. God gave them to him. And on the left side, Joshua defeats 31 kings on the mainland there in what we call Israel. Chapter 13. We haven't got there yet, but God faithfully directs an aging Joshua to divide up the families of Israel and let them finish the fight. The land is virtually subdued in Israel. The land is virtually under Israel's control. But Joshua is so old now that it's very hard on him to be the general and to be out front. And he says, look, Joshua, the land is virtually subdued now. Let each family go to their area, to an area, and let them fight as a family. In verse 13, chapter 6, it says, I myself will drive them out before the people of Israel. Only allot the land to Israel for an inheritance, as I have commanded you. Now, therefore, divide this land for an inheritance to the 9.5 tribes. And so he's telling Joshua, send them out. Let them find a territory. Let them grab a homeland for themselves. And I will be with them and drive out the people of the land. 2.5 of the families do that, and 7 of them procrastinate for some strange reason. Only 2.5 tribes really take this to heart and get their land and go. There are 7 tribes who just kind of wait, who don't. Chapter 14, God is faithful to Caleb and to those 2.5 tribes. In chapter 15, God's faithfulness to Judah and Caleb defeats giants. Chapter 16, God's faithful providing for Joseph's boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, and their incomplete conquests. So chapter 14, 15, 16, 17 is Caleb, that story about Caleb and his defeating the giants in the land there at what would be called Hebron. And then the 2.5 tribes, Judah, Ephraim, and the half tribe of Manasseh, they go ahead and they claim their land. They go to their land and they start fighting, although they don't completely cast out or destroy all the people in their land as they were supposed to, but they do gain control of their land and their properties for their families to settle. Chapter 18. It begins with verse 1, which is actually a huge verse. The tent of meeting is moved from Gilgal to Shiloh. And you can see Shiloh at the bottom of the red line going up and down. At the very bottom there, just below the end of that red line, is Shiloh. Now, Gilgal's down over here by the river and the red line coming across. You can see Gilgal and Jericho. So they moved the tent of meeting where God's presence comes at the Ark of the Covenant. Gilgal has been the central command post and will remain kind of the central military command post. But the tent of meeting goes up to Shiloh up there. And that's huge when God's presence moves into a more centrally located area up there to Shiloh. So that's what happened in verse 1. The tent of meeting leaves the temporary encampment of Gilgal and is placed in a more permanent city home in Shiloh. God is here to stay. And then in the rest of chapter 18, the seven tribes are told, "Why are you hanging around? Go get your land." If you ever want to know how this happened, the leaders, they were told, each family, there are seven other families of Israel, and they are told to take three men and go up and virtually make a map. Go up, all of you go together, go up into the north country and start mapping out seven sections of this north country. So it tells them, give landmarks, give mountains, hills, to here, to here, to here, and make seven distinct counties or states or whatever you want to call it, land areas for us to dwell in. Bring those back and we will cast lots for them. We'll roll the dice for them. And so that's what they did. For some reason, these seven families weren't moving. And God told Joshua, who told them, "What are you doing? Go claim your land. Let's get this show going." Procrastination seems to be a good human characteristic and trait. So in verse chapters 18 and 19, that is what happens. Chapter 20, God is faithful to appoint cities of refuge. They are major cities. If someone accidentally kills someone, accidental death by some type, each family had what they would call an avenger of blood, each territory, and he could go after this person and take matters into his own hands. God strictly forbid that, and he appointed cities of refuge throughout the entire land, major cities of refuge, where this person who accidentally killed someone could go to that city, talk to the elders and the leaders at the gate of the city, explain his situation, and they could let him in, and he would be safe there. The avenger of blood from the family could not go in and avenge the blood of his family. So God faithfully shows mercy to these people who have accidentally killed someone, and he sets up cities of refuge. Chapter 21, God faithfully provides cities and pasture lands for the Levites, the priests. The priests don't get property. They don't get a state. Levi and the Levitical priesthood, their inheritance is God. But what he did give them were cities in the other families' territories. He gave them cities and pasture lands to grow food and to live in as they ministered at the temple of God or at the tent of meeting or synagogue or whatever, wherever they were, whatever city they were in, they were the priesthood, and they did not get a state or their own tribal property. They just got some cities to live in and pasture land to grow their food, but they were God's. God was their inheritance. Chapter 22, and this is where I'll stop. The first half of chapter 22, verse 4, "And now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers as he promised them. Therefore turn and go to your tents in the land where your possession lies, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the Jordan. Only be very careful to observe the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. To love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, cling to him, and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul." So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents. This is the 2.5 tribes living on the right side God told them, you can let your families go ahead and settle here, but as for you men, you fighting men, you have to cross the river and go help your brothers defeat and conquer this mainland over here. Well, the day has finally come. He sends them home, back across the river. God has been faithful now to deliver the entire nation of what we would call Israel to them, and they finally get to go back home to their families. And that's what happens here. I will conclude our overview with these verses from chapter 21, verse 43. Thus the Lord gave to Israel all the land that he swore to give to their fathers. And they took possession of it, and they settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their fathers. Not one of all their enemies had withstood them, for the Lord had given all their enemies into their hand. Not one word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed. All came to pass. Chapter 22. So, there it is, just a flyby, just an overview of God's complete faithfulness. I've highlighted in almost every one of these chapters, and the Lord said to Joshua, here you go, this is where we're going. And so God has been faithful to Israel in this land. That is Joshua. It's a book of God's abiding and enduring faithfulness to us. In our Bibles, if coming out of Egypt is a shadow, a picture of our freedom from the bondage of sin over us, and it is, then the wilderness wanderings and Joshua's successful conquering are pictures of God's faithfulness to those who are not faithful to him and to those who have faithfully, although not perfectly, followed him. There are two broad categories of church people: wandering unbelievers or believers, and it's confusing as to what they are, or conquering believers. New Testament tells us that as Moses did all those plagues and brought them out of Egypt, that was a shadow or a picture of us, our deliverer, Jesus Christ, coming and delivering us from the slavery, from the bondage of sin in us, setting us free. And so many in churches proclaim that. But then we have these two kind of general categories of church people. And some seem to follow him intently and go into the land and there are victories. And others seem to wander around the mountain in the wilderness. There are wanderers and they're victorious. In any church, in any culture. A big picture overview. I have four words. You're going to love me today. I have four words, four broad lessons from these chapters we've looked at. All surrounding God is faithful. All surrounding God is faithful. First word, first lesson is duration. Duration 5, 45, and 50. You know how long it took them to conquer this land? When they went across the river and they went in, do you know how long they've been fighting to get to this point in chapter 22? 5 years. 5 years. Caleb said, if we read the story in Caleb said, I was 40 years old when God sent me in as a spy the first time. And I'm 85 now, and I still want my land. I still want that mountain you promised me. That's what Caleb says. See if I can find it for you. Chapter 14. Then the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, You know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. Now, this is a great conversation. This is Caleb and Joshua. And they've lived through the wilderness. They've lived through it all, and they're in the land. He says, Joshua, you know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh to spy out the land. And I brought him word again as it was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. Yet I wholly followed the Lord God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be an inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, just as he said these 45 years since the time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel walked in the wilderness. And now, behold, I am this day 85 years old, and I'm still as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. At the end of chapter 12, it says, it may be that the Lord will be with me, and I will drive out the giants in this land. I still want my land. 45 years later, 40 of them in the wilderness, 5 years fighting. He's 85 years old, and he still wants his land. 45 years later for Caleb. 5 years fighting, 45 years later, Caleb says, I still want my land. 500 years later, they take the land. The promise to Abraham 500 years ago at Shechem. Look around you. This is your land. As far as your eye can see, this is your land. 500 years later, God is faithful to his promise. Duration. It's not days. It's not weeks. Our walk with the Lord requires patience, persistence, consistency. We're so accustomed in America to wanting results next week. Now, how many times have I driven down the road and just been disgusted at that guy in front of me? So I fly by him to get to where I'm going, and 10 seconds later, here he comes driving by, and I'm like, we want things now. And the Lord is patient. And his people that win are patient. It takes years to win battles. Years for you and I. Some of us have years of battle ahead of us. We're praying for people. We have things we want to overcome. Sometimes it takes years, not days, not minutes, not weeks. And some of us will wait years. God will be patient for generations. It's a walk. Patience, persistence, consistency. I didn't give Mark the number 40. But I don't know if you've ever thought of this. When Moses was leading Israel, they were going to go in to Israel. When Moses, the first generation, and they chickened out, right? But if Moses would have taken them in, they'd have taken this same route. Because he told them, you're going to cross the Jordan, you're going to go to Gilgal. And they'd have gone to Jericho, because Jericho was wicked. 40 years they wandered in the wilderness, and God was patiently watching Jericho in their wickedness, waiting to judge them. Until Joshua would do it. 40 years they were on death row. 40 years God was patient with Jericho. Nothing happened. 40 years for their wickedness to just grow and boil and bubble. 40 years God waited for his people to do that. God is patient. God is patient. There's someone around you that you're just waiting. God, when are you going to get a hold of this person? I'm telling you, God is patient. You and I need to be patient, persistent, consistent in our walk, and we will be victorious as we follow God's faithfulness. Second word is diversity. Second word is diversity. This is a lesson for us about God's faithfulness. There's a tremendous diversity of challenges throughout these chapters of Joshua. The first, where they defeated two major, huge kings. But then the second was a creation challenge, where there was this flooded river. And so God is the God of creation. Later on, He would somehow slow down the sun for Joshua. God is the God of creation. So there was a creation problem. There are people issues all through this. From Moses, if you read about the wilderness wanderings, Terry's about to begin a new ladies' Bible study in the book of Numbers that will teach you all about this wilderness wanderings and the people issues. There were people issues, just like there are for you and I. There were leadership issues. Transitioning from Moses to Joshua, that's not a small task. That's a challenge in any context today in America. They went to Jericho, a huge, fortified, walled city. Diversity. And then they went to a ferocious little Ai, and they got turned back. They were fooled and they were fought against outright. There was just a diversity of challenges before Israel. All kinds. I don't know if you picked up on this back when we were studying the book of Ai, or the conquest of Ai. Listen to what he says in Joshua chapter 8, when they do defeat Ai. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear and do not be dismayed. Take all the fighting men with you and arise and go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai and his people and his city and his land." Verse 3. So Joshua and all the fighting men arose to go up to Ai, and Joshua chose 30,000 mighty men of valor, and he sent them by night. Do you know how many men they took the first time when they had sinned? And they said, "Ai is small. We'll take care of it real easy." Do you remember how many men they took with them? 3,000. With 3,000 men, we can handle this little city. But when God tells them where to go, take all your men. Take 30,000. 10 times what you thought you needed. Take 10 times that. There were only 12,000 warriors, fighting men at Ai, who were defeated. Men and women, tells us that. They only killed 12,000. They defeated them. There was only 12,000 at Ai, and they were ferocious. And they said, 3,000 will do it. God said, "You better take 30. Let me tell you, God is an expert. There are challenges all around us of all types and flavors in this life. Creation challenges, people challenges, victory challenges. How am I going to get through this? God is an expert, and you and I may totally blow it and go, "Oh, I'm going to take 3,000 people." And He goes, "No, you better take 30. God is faithful to help us, to lead us into every challenge that we face. You're brilliant. You're smart. We have technology, but God is the expert. When everything on the internet, every family member, and everybody says you only need 3,000, you better listen to God. And you're going to take almost three times as many as they have, but you don't know how ferocious this challenge is. They took 30,000 and they set up an ambush. They took some of them and they put them over here in a valley off to the west side. And then they took other ones, Joshua, in, and they marched right up to the front of the city. And out came Ai like banshees, just chasing them back. And Joshua held up his javelin, and in come from behind come the ambush. Israel's men came into the city and set it on fire. And when Ai turned around and said, "What's going on?" then Joshua let loose from both sides, and they squashed them. Ai was ferocious. God knew how to beat him. God knows how to defeat our challenges. Whatever it is, there's a huge diversity in this room of challenges before us. God is an expert in whatever your challenge may be. Third word, intensity. Intensity. As Joshua moves forward, did you catch the intensity increase of the challenges? It went from people and leadership, easy stuff, okay. It went from Jericho. It went from kind of a passive kind of challenge where they marched around the city once a day for 6 days and the trumpets were blowing and there weren't any weapons going on. It was just a parade. On the seventh day, they do seven times and they're blowing their trumpets and all of a sudden they shout and the wall falls in. And they go in and they destroy the city. Done. You go to Ai, intensity increases a little bit. How can these little people be so tough? A little bit more challenging. You get past Ai, you got five kings that band together now. And on the other side, you got Gibeon trying to fool me. Five kings mounted here to fight me. A little bit later on, it's really ramps up. Joshua made war a long time with those kings. There was not a city that made peace with the people of Israel except the Hivites. They took them all in battle. It was the Lord's doing to harden their hearts that they should come against Israel in battle in order that they should be devoted to destruction. He made war a long time. The intensity just kept increasing and increasing and increasing. He gets to a chapter 11, verse 4. The northern kings band together. And it says, they came out with all their troops, a great horde, in number like the sand that is on the seashore, with very many horses and chariots. And all these kings joined their forces and came and encamped together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid of them, for tomorrow at this time I will give them into your hands, slain to Israel." It doesn't matter to God. We can march around a city and I'll just knock a wall down. We can go up against a small, ferocious town. It's a lot more ferocious than you think it is. I've got it. Five kings, okay, take care of that. Gibeon, slick little cunning. Boy, I'm not sure if I can trust. I got that. And when the whole northern territory bands together and it looks like sand on a seashore, all these troops coming at you, God says, "Tomorrow at noon, I'll give them to you. This time tomorrow, they're yours. Slain, done. I'll take care of it." Can you see the intensity increase? The further in they go, the deeper they go, it just keeps building and building and building and building. And sometimes you and I think, the longer I'm a Christian, the easier it's going to get. I've got this. Going to map it. I've got to knock it out. I'm an old pro at this. And sometimes it just seems like the deeper we go into this Christian thing, the intensity level, it just builds. And the challenges get harder and deeper and closer in my soul. And it's just beating me. The lesson for you and I is as the intensity grows with our trials and our challenges, whether they be health, whether they be people problems, whatever they may be, whoever's trying to fool us or fight us, whatever the challenge may be, as the intensity grows, our tendency is to hold tighter to the controls. And we have to remind ourselves, God is faithful. Let him do it. It doesn't matter to him whether there's 10,000 or 10 million soldiers standing in front of us. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're marching with trumpets or they're like sand on a seashore. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if Caleb's 85 years old and the land he wants is full of giants. God will be faithful to his promise. As the intensity levels of our trials increase, don't tighten your grip on control. Let God have it. He is faithful. He can do it. Fourth word, mobility. Mobility. Mobility is the crux of faith for these people and us. To Moses and his people that wandered in the wilderness, they were to go in. They were to mobilize and go in. And they didn't. They were afraid to commit. But they went back to the wilderness and they were still mobile. They were still moving, still wandering. Some said, we can't go in, but others under Joshua obeyed. And I would say that you and I, we are going to move in one direction or another, either around a mountain or into God's rest. We are all moving. Life is moving. Time is moving. You are going somewhere, whether you know it or not, whether you plot its course or not. You and I are going somewhere. Our families are going somewhere. We are taking them somewhere. We're never staying the same. We are never the same people. Oh, I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. I'm not the same person I was when I came here 6 years ago or 7 years ago. I've changed, and I'm taking my family somewhere. So are you. We are either going back to around a mountain to wander, same old thing. I'm struggling, never changing. I'm just this thing. Or we are going into a land and gaining victories. We are conquering. We are overcoming things in our life and others. Our family is growing. We are defeating giants and hordes of people, and we are singing mountains down. Or we just keep going this same course around the mountain again. Is that you? Who are you? There are two general groups of Christians. Those who like to just wander. No direction. And those who go in and overcome. And win territory for Christ. God is still faithful. God is still faithful. You can still trust him, but listen, he wants you to trust him with all of it. He wants us to trust him with everything, everything in our life, to give it all to him. Do you know what the difference is between a desert wanderer and a deliverer follower? What's the difference between the desert and the land, the promised land? What's the difference? Here's a story. Do you know what the difference is? You're going to learn this when you go through Numbers with Terry. When they were in the desert, there were no opponents. Where's the water? Where's the food? Manna again? Quail? Are you kidding me? Serpents are biting us. There's fire burning in the outskirts of the camp over our grumbling, but there are no opponents. They're so self-consumed. They are just sustaining. There's no opponent. You're fighting yourself. You're yelling at God. And you keep going around a mountain blaming God, grumbling over your life. There's no opponents in the desert. But you know what happens when you go into Israel? Now you've got opponents. Now you've got a deliverer. And now you've got victory. Now you've got land. Now you've got real food to eat. Now you've got blessing, a land flowing with milk and honey. And you've got joy in your heart with opponents around you like sand on a seashore. And your God says, oh yeah, set your watch. Tomorrow at this time, they're done. And you can holler at the top of your lungs for the victories. The victories through the fights, through the battles. You've got victories. You've overcome. Or you've been wandering, fighting yourself, grumbling at everything that ain't right about your life. The American government, oh gosh. Oh, here we go again with this. Here, oh gosh, the church ain't this and the church ain't that. And this. I can tell you from listening to our conversations, if you're a wanderer or you're a winner, where you're at. Because you're either going to tell me about the great victories, the things God is doing in your life that you're overcoming and you're winning and you're helping this person. You're going to tell me about your victories, or you're going to tell me about all the things that aren't quite right. And there are no opponents in the desert but our own mind and our own heart. But the winners, you're fighting battles. But you got victorious. You're flying a big blue W flag. You're a winner. Which are you? Which are you? That's a question every one of us has to ask ourselves. Am I wandering, complaining, self-sustained, self-imploding, just looking, and here we are again, 5 years, 10 years later, still grumbling about life? Where's God? Did he bring us out here to die? There's no opponent. There's no opponent. It's my heart's desire, my heart's cry, that this band of people right here be as ferocious as Ai, as faithful as God. And then we have a blue W flag flying outside every day, every week. That your families and your children overcome. There's victories. If you don't think you're at a war for your kids' lives, you are nuts. There's a war for your kids' souls. Commit. Give it all. He's faithful. He can be trusted with every one of your diverse, intense problems. And it'll take years for some of them. He's faithful. You can still trust him. And if you decide to wander, he will take those kids of yours that you're so cautious about, and he'll take them into the promised land while you wander. Take your kids. Snatch up your family. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. Snatch them up today. Make a decision today. God, this is the day. We surrender to you. Terry, would you come up, you and Debbie? And we're not done with the book of Joshua. I just wanted you to see it from a 747 flying over top. It's a great lesson sometimes to look at the big picture instead of just the small stuff. While we're singing this song, I just want to ask you, will you at least think in your heart about what I've said, about committing to him, about giving everything to him. I'm going to ask you to think about your life. Is it all about you? Is it all about just kind of trying to sustain yourself and wondering where God's at and if he's going to show up with water or food today, or where's God at? Is that you? Or you want to be marked out by victory? You want to defeat some of these enemies. You want to see some of your family, some of your neighbors come to Christ, come to church, overcome. Who are you? Are you a wanderer or are you a winner? If you need to come up and pray, come up here and get on your face and pray to God. Tell him, man, I'm ready, God. I'm ready to give it all to you. I'm tired of going around this same mountain, trying to defeat this same enemy that's been chasing me, chasing me, chasing me. I'm in bondage. All I like to do is grumble. Why my problems are really everybody else's. Man, come up here and give it up. Give it up. It's for me and my house will serve the Lord, and I hope that's your prayer. If you need me to pray with you, I'll be right here. I'd love to pray with you. Give it to Christ. Give it all up.